Good afternoon. On our program this afternoon, we have John Winskalman. Hi, John.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. Can't complain.
Boy, it's just nice summer weather, too.
Yeah, this is nice.
Although it's been a little chilly now the last couple of days.
Well, yeah, it was chilly compared to Sunday.
Yeah.
But that's the way it comes. Bitter with the sweet, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's
some people like it hot, some of them like it cold.
Yeah.
So that's the Lord's way of satisfying everybody.
I guess maybe that's right.
Yeah.
Well, this certainly is picnic weather, and on last Saturday we were on our program of Home Sweet Home. We were talking about picnics a little bit.
That's right, we were. You were talking about the farmer's picnic.
Yeah, I didn't. And you someday used to go and have a little beer or wine.
Well, I had a telephone call shortly after that from a young lady in town here. Young lady, a little younger than I am. Said that her father was one of the promoters of the farmer's picnic, and he was against beer, so there wasn't any beer there.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know.
Maybe you stand corrected, John.
I don't know. I still think maybe there was a little bit around in places. But, you know, it's a funny thing. Some people do listen to this program. And I met Bill Bronsma over in the bakery, and he said, I was listening to your program this morning. This was about 10 o'clock, I guess, I met him over there. He said, I was listening to your program this morning. And he says, I remember the farmer's picnic. He says, I remember it well. He says, you know, he says, I bought your grandfather's livery business out in 1913. I knew it was somewhere along there. He said, but this was on August 13th in 1913. And he said he had 13 horses. And he said he bought the whole business, the barn, but the equipment and the stock. And he says, I started in business on the 13th of August. And he says, the farmer's picnic was going at that time. So he says, I hitched up a team on the bus. And he says, I drove out to the farmer's picnic, picked up a crowd downtown, drove them out to the farmer's picnic. So apparently the farmer's picnic was open to everybody.
I see.
You didn't have to be a farmer, and I don't know whether...
No, that, you said, was that the one that was held over on the High Banks?
The High Banks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, I made two trips out there, and of course two trips back. He said, I hauled a load of people out there, and he says, I hauled some back, and then he says, I went back again that night, or evening, and he hauled some out there with the bus and a team of horses.
What's a bus? A wagon with a bunch of seats in it? Or?
Well, this bus, if I recall, if it's the same bus, and I know it was a long, four-wheeled outfit with a canopy top on it, and the seats ran lengthwise of the bus.
Oh.
And, what will we compare it with today?
Like these cable cars or something that you see?
Well, they have the seats crossways. This thing you got in the back, and then you...
It was lengthwise.
Faced each other, yes.
Well, faced each other?
Yeah.
Oh.
He said I got home at 11 o'clock at night, he says, because I had to haul the group home at night, and he said I had about $11 for a day's receipts. He says, you talk about getting rich, getting money. He says, people complaining nowadays... They're not earning money. He says that was $11 for a man and a team of horses for all day long until 11 o'clock at night. And he says that's the way he started in and started paying for the business.
Did he say what he paid for that business, John?
Yes, he told me, but I wouldn't dare tell you.
Oh, okay.
He told me how he bought it.
But I just wondered if he could make out, that kind of money. Could he survive?
Yes, he did. He did all right.
Okay.
Of course, it wasn't very long after that, and he began to get into automotive, and he had he ran the first taxi in town, Ford touring car. But, he was doing teaming and hauling sand and stuff like that, and then they went hauling sand on the streets where they were began to pave streets. Shortly after that, so he was busy.
He did all right, huh?
He did real well. He was a good businessman. He was all right. He worked hard. And he's retired, and he deserves a good retirement. But, we were talking about the picnics out there, and I was going to tell you, he bought these 13 horses, and he tell you what he paid for it. The horses were worth about $100 a piece.
Is that right?
In those days, yeah. So... Then he bought all the rest of the stuff with
mm-hmm.
it. But I was telling you, talking about, you said, how do they get to these picnics? Well, that was one way.
Figure out how they ever get to picnics.
Sometimes I remember that band used to have a picnic, and I remember I must have been pretty doggone young. They hired a tug and a scow. And you wouldn't dare to do that today because of the liability. If somebody fall off in that scow, well, you'd be sued.
Boy.
But there used to be a gravel company. It was Waltzman Vintal, John Waltzman, Ralph Vintal. They had a tug and scows, and so they tied this scow behind the tug and towed that up the high banks with a load of people.
Oh,
they put chairs on the scow. I remember going to that thing. I was a little bit of a kid, but see, my dad played in the band. Well,
what band was that?
It's the Grand Haven Concert Band.
Oh,
about 16 or 18 people in it. And
did the band play? Oh, you mean the picnic? The band had
the picnic.
Band had
the picnic, and they played on the scow.
Did they as they were going up the river?
High banks and all that. Yeah. Well, I used to do that quite often. Here in my hand, I have a postcard that I had picked up, and it says Story and Clark Piano Company's annual picnic on the steamer E.G. Crosby from Grand Haven, Michigan. There's the Crosby dock, and there's the E.G. Crosby up alongside of it, and there's the band on the corner of the dock on the foot of Washington Street playing while they're waiting for the crowd to assemble. And they went on the E.G. Crosby, and they went to Muskegon. Sometime they went to Holland, too, some of those picnics by boat. And Storm Clark was a pretty good-sized factory.
Mm-hmm.
And probably had 200, 300, 400 employees, and that with their families would be a pretty good boatload. And they'd go up in the morning and back at night and have this picnic. And then they'd hire the band, and so the band played.
The band would play on a boat?
On the boat and up at the high banks or wherever they were. And they didn't go to the high banks with this one. They'd go either Muskegon or Holland.
Mm-hmm. Boat, is that parked now at the end of Washington? Is that where the end of Washington would be, John?
That's right.
I can't quite figure
out.
Well,
this is just about where the marina is now.
Oh, okay.
A little bit south of the where the marina is
now. Okay.
But that was the Grand Trunk and Crosby Dock.
Where was that Crosby out of?
The Crosby?
Yeah.
E.G. Crosby? Well, the E.G. Crosby was... I don't know where she was. I've got a magnifying glass here, and you can't read... Some of those boats were chartered in Duluth, and some of Milwaukee, Chicago.
Were you ever on that ship?
No, I was never on that ship. I was I wouldn't say that. I was probably down on the freight deck of it. It was kids who used to do that and watch them unload them.
Yeah.
But the E.G. Crosby was the old Naomi,
oh.
And that's the one that burned out in the lake. And she was rebuilt, and they called it the E.G. Crosby. And then she was sold, and it was called the Wisconsin, and was sold again, and was called the Puritan. And she sunk in 1929 over at Whitefish Bay. But that boat had quite a colorful career.
Was it nice? Was it
a
fancy
boat?
Yes,
it was nice. That was a nice boat.
It was.
Yes, it was. Yeah, you bet it was. And she went in and out of here for a long, long time, went over from here to Milwaukee and back.
Now, they wouldn't take a group out like that if the weather was bad, would they, John? I mean, they didn't go and bounce around out there much, did they?
Well, when they went, like, on a picnic, they'd probably go in the summertime, and they'd go quite close to shore. That is, probably a mile out and
mm-hmm.
just along the shore. No, I don't think they'd... Well, I don't know why they couldn't get seasick a mile out as well as they could 5 miles out.
Yeah.
But they probably tried to take pretty nice weather before they went.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they went. I notice you have a...
Well, I grabbed this thing out of the
picture
paper.
Picture there.
And memories of the past about that. We were talking about summertime and boating and picnicking and everything else, and I grabbed this thing out. This is the Lizzie Walsh.
You know, Lizzie Walsh used to run up and back, up to Fruitport and back.
Oh, is that where it goes?
Yeah. That was a Well, that was an excursion
boat. That's not a very big boat, though, is it?
No, that looks as probably as though it's 50 feet long or something like that. That was a steamer. I remember that. There were several of them. There was the Lizzie Waltz and the Fanny Amorose and the Hazel B and the Helen B. And I believe there was another little one, a gasoline launch, was the Ensign.
What did they do with all those boats?
Well, there wasn't the transportation up the lake that there is now. There weren't the roads. And as I said before, when people came here to summer resort, they summer resorted. They stayed here. They got here with their bag and baggage, and they went up to their cottages or summer homes and stayed there. And the transportation was by boat. Most of these cottages had a pretty good-sized dock out in front of the place, and they would hoist a flag or hoist a big ball up on a flagpole, and that was a signal for the boat to stop there, and the boat would take the passengers down the lake. They also used to haul a lot of berries and stuff. There was berries and grapes up on Spring Lake, and they'd ship them off
on these boats,
ship them down Spring Lake and to the dock here, and then ship them to Chicago or Milwaukee.
Well, were those boats part of a chain or
no,
a line or something?
No,
they were just freelance operators?
They were freelance, yeah. Well, I notice here it says that this one was owned by J. McClure, and later it belonged to Marshall McClure. I remember McClure. He was a mechanic. He was always fixing automobiles.
Oh,
he had these old antique automobiles, you know, the sidewinders and stuff like that, and he was always monkeying with something. And so he was probably a pretty good engineer and fussed around with these boats. I noticed that according to the story here, this is from Mary Kitchell's history of Spring Lake, that the boat was sold to a man from Grand Rapids who was put out of business by the Coast Guard because of insufficient number of life preservers. He ran the boat up in the mud alongside the Grand Trunk Railroad trestle and let it go to pieces. And that was the way of several of those old boats.
Well, why couldn't they buy more life preservers? Why would
I suppose that was just like everything else. Getting in the traffic, the clientele was going down and didn't pay anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the fellow said the heck with it and drove her up on the beach and let her go. Went home and
I can't imagine
worked in his garden.
Yeah. I can't imagine that a boat could make it that well up the river anyway, because if you could drive up there, if they farmed and stuff up there, there must have been roads there, too.
There were roads up there, sure.
Why couldn't you truck those grapes down?
But, you didn't have the trucks.
Oh, I suppose not, too.
Back in 1913, along 12...
They didn't have much of a truck in those days.
No, they didn't have much in the trucking, and it was easier to load them on the dock and ship them down, and they were right there at the depot. Well, I can remember you talking about that. I can remember when they hauled berries and grapes from Spring Lake by wagon, when you'd have probably 25 to 30 wagons lined up down at the
really?
End of the street waiting to unload. There was a lot of produce, grapes particularly, up in Spring Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd haul them. But, you talk about could they charge enough money?
Yeah.
Well, by today's standard, no. They'd go busted. They'd go busted in overnight. They couldn't do it. But in those days, well, look at Bill Bronsby. Charged a quarter apiece for riding from here to the High Banks. That's 4 miles out there, something like that, 5 miles. 2 bits for that. He ends up at night with $11, and he thought he was doing well. He says, I was worried. He says, because I had so much money in my pocket, $11. But, when you asked about this bus, that wagon, I don't know, a buggy like they used in the livery business, you could buy for $35 to $40.
Is that right?
I got a 1908 Sears Roebuck catalog at home. I bought it. It's a I don't know, I suppose a republished catalog. And a buggy, a good buggy, was $35 to $40, and there you could buy them from Sears and Roebuck.
Right in the catalog?
Yeah.
How would they deliver it to you, anyway?
Shipping, knocked down.
Then you'd have to put it together?
Put it together, sure. Put the tie the wheels
simple
up.
Simple instructions, just like the send stuff now.
Well, it wasn't that big a deal. It had a top on it. Of course, if it had a top on it, the top would be knocked down. And the wheels would be tied up under the reach. Four wheels, and of course the axle and springs in the body would be all put together. Mm-hmm. And you put the top on, put the wheels in it, and the shafts, and it wasn't too much of a job.
Why?
But when you bought that for $35-$40, well, if you had to have a bus, you had to buy a bus today or have one made, like that old bus that Bronsma had, the bus had cost you more today than the whole darn business.
I suppose.
As a matter of fact, you buy an automobile today, and you can't buy an automobile for what Bronsma paid my grandfather for the whole business.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
I suppose that's true. Now, when he got a taxi, was that one of the first cars around?
That was I wouldn't say the first, but one of the early ones.
Was it?
A Ford, yeah. Ford touring car.
Do you remember when the first cars came in?
Yes, I can remember some of them.
Well, I bet it scared the wits out of the horses, didn't it?
Well, some horses were afraid of them, yes.
Were they?
Yeah. Some horses were afraid of the interurban, too.
Were they?
Yes, you betcha. You had to.
Well, but that scared the interurban operators, didn't it? I mean,
well,
if you didn't know if a horse was
going to
jump.
They'd go slow if there was a horse. If they see a horse along the road here in town, they'd slow down.
Would they?
Yeah.
I talked to someone calling the problem solvers the other day and said that their father or grandfather, I forget exactly how that went now. It was one, I think it was the 4th of July, Barbie and I were doing the program, had the first milk delivery truck in Grand Haven. And she said, boy, they were really proud of that truck.
That was a truck, huh?
And I think it was a Ford, too, she said.
Almost likely. I remember the first truck that the baking company got.
How old were you then?
About 13.
Were you working there then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would they ever let you drive it when you were that young?
Yes, once in a while. then they got a Ford. The first one they got was an Overland.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That was a bigger one.
And that was bigger than a Ford?
That was bigger than the Ford, yeah. That wasn't like these Overlands, that you saw.
Overland that you buy today isn't very big, is it?
Well, that's a Jeep today. Yeah, they don't make an Overland, no.
No, but that's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, that was
that Jeep is made by
American Motors.
American Motor, Nash.
Yeah.
American Motor.
Yeah.
They bought out
Nash
Overland
today.
Yeah, bought out the Overland people. No, this Overland was a pretty good-sized truck. That is, it was a panel delivery truck. And then they bought a Ford a little later, and the Ford...
was that a good truck?
Yes, the Ford was. I think the Ford was a better one than the Overland.
Well, that Willis, that was... I didn't know they were so big.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. I wouldn't call it a huge truck, but it was a heavier
one.
Was
it a 4 or a 6 or what?
4-cylinder.
It was a 4?
Oh, yeah. And it had... I remember I drove it over to Spring Lake once, to the Lakeside Pavilion in the morning, and I had to be to work at the Weather Bureau. This was when I was moonlighting.
Uh-oh.
And that Lake Avenue in Spring Lake, down to the lake, was a sand street. And I delivered the bread to the Lakeside Pavilion, and I got up the, there's still a little grade there. I got up that grade just a little ways, and the motor was running, but the wheels weren't turning, and I couldn't figure out what was the matter. Well, the axle broke. So I had to be to work at the Weather Bureau at 8 o'clock. And so I let the doggone thing, what else could you do? I had to stand in the middle of the road, which wasn't in anybody's way. They could go around it. And I ran, and I caught the interurban at Lake Avenue and Spring Lake and got here by time to get to work at the Weather Bureau. And then I told them over to the bakery, their truck was standing in the road over there.
Oh, I bet they weren't happy, were they?
Going hauling. Well, it was nothing you could do. It wasn't my fault.
No, was that the Willys yet?
That was the Overland, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did that have a clutch and gears, John?
Oh, yeah.
What did that have?
No, that had clutch and gear.
Uh-huh.
Inside, not like on the, like the straight shift.
Yeah.
down on your right side. Inside.
But then when you got that four, that must have had that fun.
That had the three pedals on the floor.
Yeah. Oh, that was a miserable thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't that hard to drive when you're used to...
Yeah. But that's the one I learned to drive on. That is, a Ford was the first one I ever drove. I learned to drive a Ford, Ford truck. Vin had two or three of these. What they used to call them, little yellow jitneys. They were a little yellow Ford truck with a windshield and a seat and a box, no top on or anything. And we learned to drive that.
Did those things have any exhaust system on them at all, John, or was it just open exhaust?
No.
Did it roar?
Oh, no, they had a muffler on.
Did they?
No, they had a muffler on. Some of them had a cutout on, and of course they were like the kids now. They fix them up so the exhaust rumbles like a motorcycle, but some of them had a little pedal on the floor you could step on that would open that, and then it bypassed the muffler.
Oh, yeah, that was an awful sound, wasn't it?
The police were after you if you did that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Well, that's what a guy did.
They should do it today, too.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah, I shook some of those cars go down the main street here, you'd think that... world was afire.
Well, what about the cutout that had a whistle in it or something?
Oh, that was an exhaust.
You do that either, did they?
Well, I guess that was all right.
Was it?
Yeah, that had a string or a chain on it, and then the exhaust went through that whistle and go toot, toot, toot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was all right.
Yeah. When did they first get a traffic cop then? Did they need a cop right away? Or?
Well, no. Gosh, you know, I was reading in the paper the other day, and I would hardly believe this was true, but it said 50 years ago in the Grantham Tribune, 50 year ago column, where the traffic signals had arrived for the city of Grandhaven, and they would soon be put up.
What, you mean the lights? Traffic lights?
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were 50. That's 50 years ago that they had traffic lights in town. If you'd asked me, I'd said, well, we probably had them for the last 20, 25 years, but we had 50 years.
Boy.
We used to have, they used to put bubbles in the street so that you couldn't cut corners. You had to go around them.
They'd put why would they do
that? Well, so that they wouldn't run into each other on the corners. Otherwise, they'd go cut the corner, but they put a bubble in the street, and then you had four of them, one over here and here and here and here, and then you were coming down the street, you had to go around it and between them. There was no corner cutting, of course. A lot of times you missed them and you hit them. But it never tipped anybody over. But then they tried that several different ways. They had them in the middle of the street, and you had to go around the middle. Well, that was you had to make a pretty long turn then. You had to go pretty slow then. But then they began putting four of them there, so you went in between. You stayed on the right side of the one of them and went through between them.
That was confusing, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I bet it about drove guys nuts when they first put those things in.
Yeah, I suppose it did. But they've had to learn all that the hard way. I suppose our city wasn't any different than any other one.
I wonder, how long was it? Was traffic pretty heavy before they started getting in accidents with those goofy things, John?
No.
That was a brand new invention.
You got accidents right along.
Is that right?
Sure. Every once in a while.
Of course they wouldn't get hurt so quickly, would they? I mean, they're going slow.
Of course they didn't go as fast. Well, how fast could you go with one of those Model Ts?
Not very fast, I don't
think. I remember when the boss he had a Maxwell.
Oh, that was a good car, wasn't it?
It was a classy job.
Yeah.
So when I went to work for him, he had a Maxwell. So that was in 1922.
What size engine was that?
That was a four-cylinder.
Was it a four?
Yeah. And that was a black sedan. Gee, that was a classy deal with all chrome on. Holy smoke. Chrome wheels or disc wheels with a chrome rim around it.
Oh, my.
And then you took that rim off to take the tire off. They were... what they call dismountable tires. You could mount them. They were mounted on a rim, and you slipped the rim and all on there. And it's not like today. And they had inner tubes in. And if you had a flat tire, you took that rim, that band off, and then took the tire and rim off from it. There wasn't a wheel like this today. And you just slipped the other one on. And this Maxwell had that was all chrome on a black disc wheel. And there were chrome strips on it, and it was pretty classy. That one had a chocolate axle in it, too. The boss always called it chocolate axle because we broke all... I don't know how many axles we busted on it. You'd be going along the road and it just broke, that's all. I suppose the metal got fatigued, is that what they say?
Yeah, I guess. You mean if you're just driving straight down a road?
I remember I went over to Ferrysburg one time with it, or parked away on the Muskegon Road. It was coming along there to where the road goes off to, what they call that drive, Dogwood Drive.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And all of a sudden, the engine was running, no car, and the axle was broke. And he used to say, he said, that darn car had chocolate axles in. I don't know how many times.
Something must have been funny. Yeah. Something was wrong.
Well, it was just, I suppose the metal got crisp and just broke.
Was that open?
No, that was a sedan.
Is that right?
That was a Honey. That was, low. That was the first one of the low type. Otherwise, they were great big high sedans.
This was lower, huh?
Yeah.
Did that have a heater in it? We were talking about that the other day.
No.
It didn't have a heater.
No, there wasn't a hot water heater at all. They made what they call a manifold heater.
Yeah, but that...
And they put it over the manifold, and you got a little heat from that.
You never got much, though,
no,
did you, John?
No. I had an Overland that had a pretty good heater in it. I guess I told you about this.
Was that a hot water heater?
No. That was an exhaust heater, but it was under or right in front of the front seat. And it was a good deal like these baseboard heaters in the home, just a round pipe there, and it had flues around it. And it was fixed so that it attached to the exhaust before it went into the muffler.
Oh.
And so the exhaust, that was hot. The exhaust went through that little heater. That was a good one. And then, of course, later on, they got the hot water heater, isn't that?
But that was an option, even then, wasn't it?
That didn't come with a car. You had to buy that from Sears Roebuck or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that was something special. that was quite a deal. Of course, you always had a blanket. You had a rope. Automobiles in those days had a robe rail on the back seat.
Yeah.
And you had one of those nice Pendleton lap robes, and you put that over your feet and keep that heat under you there. And that was the days when heavy overcoats and big gloves were the thing.
Oh, and I bet you that old windshield steamed up too, didn't it?
Yeah. And no windshield wipers either.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you some more about some of those things, John, but our time is over.
Is it?
Yeah.
Gosh, where'd it go to?
I don't know. We're going to have to run out of here.
Okay.
We started out on picnics and ended up on cars.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for coming up.
My pleasure.
Next month, I'd sure love to do it with you again.
Okay, Lord willing, I hope we can.
All right.
It's fun doing it.
Our guest on today's program has been John Van Skelvin.